Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of Deciphered right here on the CryptoCast Network. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, so much for joining us. We have an amazing show to talk to you guys about today. But before we do, we are screen sharing our website at CryptoCast.network, where you can find our YouTube channel, Twitter, Instagram, iTunes, and RSS feeds. And we actually have some merchandise on there if you guys want to check that out to support the channel. And again, we are sharing our QR code as this is a community-supported YouTube channel. So we really support all the, we really appreciate all the tips and the feedback that you guys give us. And there's actually going to be a conference over here in Las Vegas, Nevada, guys. Really looking forward to this. This is going to be Tone Vase's conference. We have a lot of people coming. It's going to be a Bitcoin, not blockchain conference. It's going to be in Las Vegas, January 24th through 26th. We got a lot of great people coming there. We got, you know, of course, Tone Vase, the crew there. We got Saif Edean, Max Kaiser, Peter Todd, a lot of great people. So we're looking forward to that. You guys can check that out. And I think there's only 44 tickets left at 0.1. And then, of course, Tone also has a VIP ticket. So guys, check that out. It's going to be really, really fun talking Bitcoin all day long. So with that aside, let's just introduce our stop the screen share here and introduce our amazing panelists and guests today on the show. Jameson and Elena joining us from Casa. How are you guys doing, Elena? We'll ask Elena first. How are you doing, Elena?
Hi, Vortex. I'm doing very well, especially being you with you here.
Awesome. Yeah, we love to have you on the show. We love to have you here, Elena. I was talking Bitcoin, of course, long storied history in Bitcoin. We'll get into a little bit of that a little bit later, but let's also introduce Mr. Jameson Lopp. Jameson, how you doing?
Not bad. Just trying to keep up with these nodes that we started shipping out and getting feedback from the customers and making them even better.
Yeah, man. Awesome. Yeah, looking forward to that. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as well. Really interesting stuff, guys. But before we get too much into Casa, the node and other things like that, into too many details, let's get some high level sort of questions going on before I ask you actually, before I ask you guys what you individually do for the company. Let me just ask you guys individually one by one. We'll go with Jameson first. What really is sort of the idea behind Casa? And really, like, I want to know what drives the passion behind you guys and the team to create this product?
I guess you could say that it's kind of a sovereign individual thesis. You know, we're trying to bring about the world that we believe is possible, where we've always talked about Bitcoin enabling people to be their own bank, but we think that there's a big gap in the market with the products and services that make it possible for you to do that without having to be a super nerd that spends days, weeks, years learning all of this stuff to do it yourself. So we, at least with our Vault product, we're trying to recreate a private banker relationship where we're helping people manage their wealth. But the difference, of course, being that we don't actually have control over anyone's wealth. We're going to help them manage their own wealth. So it's really about building tools and services and great user experience to help us get to that next level of adoption.
Awesome. Really great to hear. And I'm excited to talk more, to get into this, Jameson. Every time you start talking about it, man, I get excited. So let's ask Elena here. Elena, what drove you to sort of join Casa? What do you see Casa as? I'd like to hear from your own words. Like, what do you think Casa as? And again, same kind of question to you. What's driving your passion to be behind this project?
Besides an amazing team, in the first place, there's also a big overlap in the ideas on where we should go or where we could take this. When we met with Jeremy, the CEO, for the first time, we kind of spent some time over a coffee discussing the future as we envisioned, and we basically realized that we overlap in pretty much most of it. At the same time, you know, the work that I started with Trezor is great because it kind of laid the base of private ownership of crypto. But moving forward in time and, you know, developments and adoption, we also saw like a lot of new problems. So we basically tackled the digital risk and the third party risk with the hardware wallet. But then we either have the extreme of being completely on your own with a hardware wallet, having to protect your recovery seed and having to eventually protect multiple recovery seeds if you decide to go into a multi-sig, or being on the other scale where you just basically take and give away access to your crypto to a custodian company. So, and there was nothing in between. And, you know, even Bitcoin and crypto still being very early. I still consider Bitcoin very early. That where we see a lack of some customer approach or some higher level, let's say, customer services such as advisory, you know, something that could help people just have and manage their crypto without fear, without fearing of losing access, without fearing of, you know, compromising their seed, without fearing of what happens if I die, stuff like that. So. As Jameson said, you know, the crypto of private money comes at some risk. So we want to help people. Basically, we want to hold their hands on making it easier.
Really great. Yeah. And I actually just tweeted something out about this morning. You know, some people still don't seem to realize how early days we are. They're trying to look for the new Facebooks and the new Googles. And it's like, we're still kind of building out the fundamental protocols of building out the rails, you know, like with Lightning and continuously optimized. Bitcoin as the base chain. So it's really interesting to see how really early we are. You know, there's a whole lot of, I think, opportunity coming up. And, you know, it's very early days, as you guys say, it's the difficulty in doing some of these basic things. It gets really, really crazy with command line interfaces and, you know, having to hold your own keys and things like that. So before we get to more into Casa, I'm going to ask just quickly, just really briefly for both of you, Jameson first, what is your role within this company?
So I've, you know, brought over my like 3 years of experience from running infrastructure at BitGo. So doing high level management of the infrastructure and sort of general advising of all of the engineers who, you know, this is their first time in crypto and they may not know some of the little gotchas under the hood when it comes to configuring things or using certain libraries or just general best practices and methodology for building crypto wallets. So I'm not doing as much deep diving coding stuff these days. I'm more trying to let everyone else be a sponge and soak up all the stuff that I've learned over the past few years.
Awesome. That's a great place to be in. You know, I know you did a lot of heavy-handed work, you know, at BitGo, especially with the user-activated software last year. There were some pretty awesome, of course, pictures that you were writing or that you were tweeting out there about writing some of that code. That was pretty great, especially, you know, when nobody was really when people were starting to get really worried about if Bitcoin was going to survive or not, you know, we had, you know, the people that were deep in Bitcoin like yourself, making sure, writing the code, whatever it took. And of course, in your case, writing the code to make sure that everything goes smoothly with the user activated software, making sure that 2x doesn't destroy us, right? So crazy stuff like that. So awesome work there, Jameson. So let me ask Elena this question here. Elena, answer me this, Elena. Why is Casa better than a Trezor?
Oh, it's super compatible. it's not that it's better. It's a continuation for me. You know, I'm a business developer, and I usually like to just pick up a project from zero to one. And when it's successful and profitable, I'm like, okay, what's next? You know. So Casa is a very natural continuation. We are still very close with Trezor. And what I hope to bring to Casa is not just like the long-term vision, but also some like, let's say, business common sense and product development and helping with, partnerships and channel partnerships and so on. So that's what I'm working on. I'm officially the head of strategy, if you want it short.
Head of strategy. Now, of course, that was a bit of a loaded question. Why is it better, right? Because, you know, Casa is different. It's for a different tier of cryptocurrency holder, right? It's more for people who hold a little bit more than maybe just a couple hundred dollars that they want to store on their Trezor. Casa sort of is sort of helping people store larger amounts. Is that right, Elena?
Yes, that's right today, but that's not the ultimate goal, of course. We are focusing on, we're basically offering a premium level service. Imagine a white glove type of service for crypto wealthy, if you will. Eventually I would like to expand, you know, and offer the features as we perfect them and as we basically building up the entire system to also open up to let's say lower tiers in the product management slang. One of the steps that we want to, you know, we want everyone in the crypto space be secure and safe and self-confident. And so having to think what to do is not where crypto should go. It should be everything like next button style, right? So eventually, you know, we will trickle down, but right now we basically made another step. We launched a Casa node, and that's something that's basically open to anyone for $300. So our premium level service, when I step back, is priced at $10,000 a year. And as you're right, you have to have a certain amount of crypto to justify that. But, you know, eventually I've seen this with Trezor as well. When we started, and people would ask me, so how many Bitcoins do I have in order to justify a purchase of a hardware wallet? And I said, any amount, because, in a few years, your crypto may be worth 10 times as much. And I was wrong because it was way more. So that depends, you know, the risk perception of everyone is different. But yeah, you're right. Right now, it's not just for small holdings.
It's also interesting, I think, to look at this from a business standpoint, where a lot of the consumer wallets that are out there are free. And it's very, very difficult to compete in that space because a lot of your competition is not putting a price tag on their product. And what are they doing instead? Well, in at least some cases, they are selling data or doing advertising or basically doing some sort of surveillance on their users. And we are kind of philosophically opposed to doing that, really, even to the point that we're being very conscientious about not putting any sort of standard developer debug, logging, and other types of tools that are helpful for us because we don't want to accidentally surveil our users and have data leaks and run into the issues that we're seeing crop up in a lot of large technology organizations these days. So from a business perspective, it does kind of make more sense to start out top tier because we can get a lot larger profit margin and then figure out how to compete more on the smaller profit margin services later.
Yeah, it's interesting because we see so many of these large companies, not even tech companies, but tech companies too get hacked and have all their users' information leaked. Then, of course, we have, you know, social security numbers leaking like crazy from the credit companies and, you know, crazy stuff. So it makes sense that people are forward-thinking companies like you guys, especially in the crypto space, need to start thinking adversarially, right? More adversarially to not do these debugging procedures or create these honeypots that hackers can just come along and take it. And now, another interesting point you guys made is that, so you are starting with a specific type of people, right? So I guess you could say the crypto wealthy, but that's because I believe that's where you feel you guys can make the most impact right now. But the idea is to sort of trickle that technology down to the average person in the future as well. Is that right? Anybody can take that. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's very hard to sell security. This was something that BitGo was good at. Well, and also even at BitGo, there was a learning lesson where when I first joined in 2015, we were actually trying to decide whether or not to also target the consumer market. And so BitGo had about a 1 year period where we were trying to onboard a lot of small users and, you know, get a like $10 to $30 or $50 a year service out of them. And really what we found was that A, it's very difficult to sell even a $10, $20 service because most of the others are free. And B, you end up having a huge overhead, you know, with customer support and ending up having to do a lot of handholding and basic user education. So I am, you know, as much as people hate on services like blockchain.info and Coinbase and various large providers, I think that they are providing some interesting services, at least along the user education front, where they're essentially subsidizing a lot of the onboarding and customer education for new entrants into the system. But just from a like ability to sell security to people standpoint, it's a lot easier to sell security to someone who has a lot more to lose. And so that's another reason why it makes sense to target the folks who have millions of dollars worth of crypto that is, in many cases, we found causing them, you know, to have issues even sleeping at night. And so really what we're selling is peace of mind. And we found a number of users, once they've gotten onboarded with us, have essentially told us that they have much greater peace of mind and they're not worried about, you know, some catastrophe happening that causes them to get completely wiped out.
Yep, that makes great. That makes a lot of sense. Great points, Jameson, on that. You know, you have to serve the people that need it the most. And of course, people with the largest amounts are going to be the ones that tend to need that the most right now. So let me ask you this then, Jameson. Why should we trust Casa?
Well, yeah, you shouldn't. We're going to be making some posts.
I'm going to ask you too, Elena, after Jameson. I'm going to ask you too, but let's get Jameson's comment first. Sorry.
So we haven't said anything about it yet, but we're currently working on formalizing our open source policy and deciding which parts of our infrastructure get open source so that people can have better peace of mind of the security of the code itself. But ultimately, at least for the Vault product, the fact that we're actually building on top of these other hardware key management device platforms is very interesting from a kind of like separation of ability and partitioning, I guess, of the security of the system. Because what it means is that even if Casa and our code or our database got compromised in a way that it tried to get you to create a transaction that went to an address that didn't belong to you, you would still have to manually verify that address is going to receive some amount of value. You have to verify that on multiple different hardware devices and platforms that Casa has no control over. So that's kind of like the ultimate stopgap of Casa doing anything particularly malevolent. And of course, I didn't even talk about the like theft of private keys. That's actually a complete non-issue because we only have one out of the five keys. All of the other keys are on completely separate hardware. So really like the biggest threat or attack vector for the multi-sig Vault product is bad data or bad code somehow getting out onto our servers and causing transactions to be formed in a malicious way. But like I said, you would have to be completely not paying attention to anything and have to confirm multiple times on different devices. So that provides a level of security that you don't really see even in other multi-sig products.
Very, very interesting. So you guys only keep one of the keys then. You guys don't keep, you know, for example, every single key. So then let's ask Elena then. So Elena, why should, you know, the average, you know, crypto wealthy person trust Casa? What would they use? What would they trust in Casa over a Trezor?
This is not about like trusting Trezor versus trusting Casa, because our clients are basically, all of them are using both a Trezor wallet and a Ledger, some of them multiple, and Casa. Casa is only one key of the five, so as that Jameson already explained. So it's more a, you know, the entire setup as it's done, plus our internal policies about protecting user data. We are very careful about not even sharing customer names within the company and stuff like that. So we have really policies internally to protect our customers. I don't want to give more details because why?
We don't want to expose all the security.
Exactly. And we don't want to teach our competitors that may come, you know. But this is basically, you know, what Jameson was explaining, and the entire multi-sig setup does not allow us to move the money. And besides, we basically provide dedicated client service to each of our customers. where, you know, they know each other, they've seen each other face to face. So there's an additional, basically, hand holding, but that's it. No Bitcoin holding on Casa side.
Very, very cool. So let me ask Jameson this. Jameson, what happens if the Casa servers get blown up?
Yeah, so we have outlined a what we call sovereign recovery process, where when you initialize your Casa wallet, we send you basically the public key data that's associated with all five of those keys. And when you have that pub key data and you know a few other attributes about the wallet itself, you can then use that to recreate the wallet using other open source software that is compliant with the various Bitcoin improvement proposals out there. And as long as you then have your hardware devices, you plug them in and do the actual signing to create a transaction. So it's a lot more manual process and not nearly as user-friendly as using the Casa software itself, but we have a proof of concept that you can go, and we actually encourage our users to test as part of their onboarding process to show that, you know, nothing that we're doing is fully reliant upon Casa as a single central server. If anything, our server is only really there to help facilitate, the partially signed Bitcoin transactions. And we even have on our longer term roadmap various plans to move more and more of that facilitation and queries and stuff off of our server and to things such as your at-home node device. So this is all, you know, part of a very long-term roadmap to make the user as sovereign as possible and just make us be a software service provider that doesn't have the ability to block anything or, you know, censor anything or steal anything, even if we went rogue or disappeared off the face of the planet.
Awesome. Yeah. That sounds good. Lena, do you want to elaborate?
Yeah. Casa also makes steps towards where our clients don't have to trust themselves so much either. So by that, I want to say we came up with something that's called seedless setup. And that basically is a protection against human creativity or for forgetfulness or for, you know, against some criminal minds. Because we came up with a multi-sig setup where basically we did completely away with the recovery seed with those 24 words. Our clients do not store them, and that makes them, in my opinion, more secure because, you know, having four keys to protect or five keys to protect and five different recovery seeds actually increases your risk exposure. So that doesn't work, you know, the traditional way of setting up a multi-sig on your own and then ending up with these 10 items that you need to protect and you need to know, you know, on top of that five pins or maybe even passphrases. So that it's a bunch of data and a bunch of items to protect all of a sudden. So the way for us was to completely get rid of the recovery seed, and that I think brings a huge peace of mind to a lot of users, because before that, even during my CEOing of Trezor, people would ask this a lot, like, what do I do with the recovery seed? What if my house burns down? Should I copy it? Should I divide it? You know, what should I do with it? It's a completely new paradigm for people to all of a sudden, all their wealth depends on a piece of paper. So there's that, you know, so you don't have to trust yourself anymore that you've stored it well and nobody's going to steal it from you. Yeah.
Very interesting. See, it sounds like, so it really sounds like you guys are trying to merge sort of this usability of a mobile app, some simplicity of something that people are familiar with kind of like the infrastructure of what we used to come to expect to maybe of a bank, right? So, but of course, in the previous scenario, the bank had all the power and everything like that. There was, of course, no self-sovereignty at all. But with you guys, it seems that since you guys only hold one key, then it's trying to combine the best of both worlds, trying to make sure that you have this cold storage option, but that it's secure and that it's easy to use at the same time. So speaking of that, Elena, maybe you can walk us through sort of the onboarding process? Because as you say, like the biggest risk to the user, right, is themselves. And I think you guys are trying to eliminate as much as possible without actually eliminating the user itself as much as you can before we eliminate the user. So maybe you can just quickly walk us through an onboarding process with Casa.
Yeah, what you mentioned about the user experience, the usability is a key component to everything we do. So you have, you know, the security of hardware wallets and the multi-sig and the multi-device, multi-location setup, but you have the actual usability of Tinder. I don't know, raise your hands, whoever's using Tinder. But, you know, there's this swipe left and right and the super like, and we are extremely lucky to have the actual designer of Tinder on our team as a lead designer. So as you see, and this Scott Harf is his name, he is the god of everything that gets out to the public. So he is on top of the chain. He doesn't have experience with Bitcoin, which is amazing, because he quickly sees any weirdness, you know, in the process and anything that may come up is not really user-friendly. So there's that, you know, the user-centric design is really important component of Casa and what we're trying to achieve. And so the onboarding basically happens face-to-face with a dedicated client advisor who sets you up with your hardware wallets, who sets you up with the application, explains how it works. And then we have a procedure where the client is testing everything. We play with testnet coins first, you know, we do some disaster recoveries, stuff like that, until the client is completely comfortable with onboarding his entire crypto wealth. And that's basically it for the beginning. Then we continue to be there available 24/7 on call. You know, you wake up at night and you realize you don't have your Trezor. So who do you call? You call your Ghostbuster from Casa, right? So that's there. We try to educate our customers a little bit on the security, but mainly keep up to date with what's going on and what's relevant to them in the market. Jameson, maybe you could tell about your Faraday bag and all that stuff. You know, we like to also play and to bring things into perfection, and Jameson has a perfect dome for that, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, the actual technical steps of onboarding is really fast. I think the part of onboarding that takes the longest is if you're using a ledger and it still forces you to write down those seed phrase so that you can confirm it before you continue. But then, of course, we tell them to destroy the seed phrase that they temporarily wrote down. Trezor is streamlining that with the seedless option. But the actual process of getting your wallet set up is pretty much as simple as we create an account for your whatever email address you want. You set the password. You download the mobile app and then log in. Start walking through the process, and it's basically, you know, we generate a private key on the mobile device. We then suck up the extended public keys off of your three different hardware devices, and each one of those steps only takes a matter of seconds. And then once you've got that last hardware public key, then everything is ready to go, and you can set up. Well, we automatically have a testnet account that's created, and, you know, we'll send you some testnet coins, and then you can start playing around with creating transactions or with rotating keys or with doing the sovereign recovery process, getting completely familiar with all of the available options in the product. But as Alina was saying, we have gotten rid of the need to figure out how to securely store the seed phrases. And now instead, I think it's easier for humans to visualize just having, you know, these three different devices and keeping them safe. And so the only thing we really need to worry about there, we don't need to worry about like physical theft or access of any single device, because they're being kept geographically separated and they're PIN protected. We really more have to worry about keeping them safe from natural events happening, you know, whether it's a fire or like an electromagnetic pulse or what have you. And so we also have as one of our little products that is available is a Casa branded EMP proof bag that's the perfect size for your Trezor, Ledger, what have you. You know, we've also talked about maybe potentially fireproof bags and stuff like that, but I haven't settled on anything yet. But it's, this is kind of part of the service offering, is that CASA has experts who are thinking about all of these crazy edge cases so that you don't have to. And all you have to do is, you know, follow the instructions that we're telling you, follow the instructions that are on the mobile device, the mobile app, and you'll have a level of security that's arguably even greater than anything that you'll get at a single bank.
Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting. You know, I like the point, Jameson, where, you know, I'm with you. I've been in the space almost as long as you, Jameson. And I'm, you know, I remember the days when we were talking about, we wanted everybody to be their own bank, right? Like this was the goal. But of course, as for the viewers listening to this and you know, the audio listeners, you can sort of grasp how difficult it actually is to be your own bank. Like, it's really not as easy as we wanted. And it's going to actually continue to evolve and to get easier, thanks to companies like CASA that is thinking about processes to make it easier and providing services to do that. But we're just not there yet. It's very, very early days. Again, with the command line mm-hmm. interfaces, you know, it's very difficult to use. I actually tweeted out a picture of an old modem where you had to actually put the phone on the modem and have it dial out. It's pretty crazy, you know, trying to have people go out and buy a modem, configure it to their ISP, and then download software to make that work after that. And, that's where we are right now. And so I think services like this are going to help us get to where we need to be with people being able to hold sovereignty over their own funds, you know, as opposed to the previous solution, which, of course, was 100% trust in a third party like a bank. Now, you guys are kind of pioneering this best in class key store with this really great customer service of like being able to handhold people through the whole process. But let me ask you this, Jameson, what happens if I lose all my keys and all my devices that you give me? What happens, Jameson?
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do here is find the balance between sovereignty, security, and responsibility. And, you know, this is arguably one of the reasons why a lot of people like banks. It's because banks have experts that are thinking about all of these edge cases. And, you know, that's basically what they get paid to do. And really, from an even higher level, like, this is how society has evolved, right? Is a specialization of tasks. It's like nobody out there is humanly able to be an expert in everything. And in order for us to be more efficient and more productive and able to do something really well and get compensated for it, is that we delegate responsibility for certain things to other providers, and we're willing to pay them some certain amount of resources for that. So, you know, ultimately, everything that we've done at CASA is it's possible for anyone else to do themselves if they have the technical expertise, if they have the time, if they're willing to scale the steep learning curve that is required, which, you know, is arguably months or years of deep experience in this field. So, because we are a company that is focused on users being more sovereign and us as a company not having control over the user's funds, it ultimately means that if the user screws up enough, then it's game over. So we try to strike the right balance when we were thinking of like the multi-sig setup and, you know, combining it with hardware devices and combining it with, you know, having geographically separated key material, that if you lose a device when you have a CASA wallet, it's actually extremely simple to recover from that. You can go buy your own device off of any website or store if there is a Cypherpunk store available near you, or you can call us and we'll overnight one to you. And all you have to do, you don't even have to call us up on the phone to do a key rotation. It's actually built into the mobile application itself. You go into the app, you click on that device and the key shield, and you say, I need to replace this. And then we walk you through a very simple setup where, once again, we suck the extended public key off of that device, and we then walk you through creating a transaction that sweeps your old wallet and basically sends all of the value to your new wallet, which is the same. 4 out of the 5, key sets are the same, but just doing that all in a very seamless process, so that the user can then once again see their key shield and have it, you know, show that, you know, everything is all right. Now, if you lose two devices at the same time before you can replace one of them, which, you know, I guess could happen, especially if you don't have your keys, geographically separated far enough and there's some sort of major disaster, then at that point you are going to have to call up CASA. And that is when the key that we are holding comes into play. So basically, you'll have to go into the recovery mode to sign a recovery transaction where you're getting your remaining two devices and then asking CASA to co-sign the third set of keys. And of course, we are not going to do that in an automated fashion. We're going to require strong voice and face identification. And actually, this is also where the end-of-life scenarios come into play, where if you have passed and your family needs to get access and they don't have enough devices to sign a transaction themselves, then they might come to us, you know, bringing various legal documents, you know, death certificate, et cetera, and at that case, CASA would also co-sign to release the funds. So that, of course, is the boundary condition. If you lose three devices at the exact same time and you're not paying attention, or for whatever reason you were keeping them all in your house and it burned down, then it's game over. And unfortunately, you didn't follow instructions and you have to suffer the consequences. And this is, of course, the trade-off that anyone in the system is making, is that in order to have more power over your own assets, you have to be willing to take the responsibility for them.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, this is what individual sovereignty means. It means taking personal responsibility. So, very, very good points, Jameson. Let me ask you, Elena. It's funny because, you know, a lot of people don't understand the traditional financial system, about how many layers deep it is, just built after century, you know, decade after decade of trust and all of this craziness. It's interesting that it gets so complex. Even with Bitcoin, all the people that I've known about Bitcoin really didn't start investing until like a year or two after they started learning about it, because this stuff is so complex. So let me just ask you this, Elena. You guys are talking about targeting, you know, certain threshold of user at the beginning, but maybe you can share some of the free security stuff or some of the tools that you guys have released so far or are willing to release in the near future for just the average person to sort of, again, mm-hmm. you know, help the whole ecosystem raise its security awareness.
Yes, we've noticed that a lot of people in the space still, you know, struggle with some very basic security principles that don't even have so much to do with Bitcoin and crypto, but are like basic security hygiene, let's say. And so recently we released a free tool, which is a security checklist, or you can call it the security health check, where you can just go to our website, keys.casa, and there's, let me open that real quick, and there's this button right there.
I'm going to screen share it too for the live viewers.
Thank you. There's a button that says improve your security, and basically you create an account that's free of charge. You do your own security health check and you go through very basic questions. And we will expand on that tool in the future. So we kind of keep the crypto space a little bit more educated and being able to check on the different, you know, attack vectors that they're facing. So we're asking, yeah, exactly. You can click through a little bit if you want to what you do. yeah, it's everything that you will see from CASA coming is simple. Click next. there's just yes and no answers, you know, questions like, do you use a password manager? Do you have two-factor authentication? You can see that. So this is something that I'm super excited about because we want to, you know, just open up these questions and again make it very, very simple and easy for people to go through.
Yeah, this is really great. You know, for the audio listeners, we are screen sharing the website here at app.keys.casa. And it's really interesting to be able to get your own report here because they do a nice walkthrough of everything that you need here. So for those who are want to check this out, definitely go to CASA. What is the website here?
What is keys.casa.
Yeah, keys.casa. That's what it is. And we're at app.keys.casa. So yeah, definitely check that out. It's very, very helpful. And I'm looking forward to more of these types of these efforts from the ecosystem itself to help the whole ecosystem. Like, you know, we have the OpTech newsletter now, right? I know that's a lot lovely. Of people that are enjoying that. Yeah, exactly. And so these types of efforts, this grassroots is what I really, really like to see us all together, you know, sort of building this new financial system together, an open financial system. So really, really great to hear. Let me see. What was the next question here? Yeah. So actually I want to ask Jameson this because this is pretty interesting. So Jameson, let me ask you this. You know, you've said this in the past, you've said that CASA is more of a Bitcoin first company. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah, well, the thesis is that if Bitcoin fails, then it's likely not going to be good for the rest of the ecosystem. And we also believe that a lot of the innovations are happening in Bitcoin. And so, you know, it's been interesting to see some of the other companies in this space kind of eschew bothering to add support for latest features and best practices in Bitcoin and rather are focused on, you know, adding as many different crypto assets as possible. They're kind of doing a like a spray and pray approach, I guess.
Like everybody is doing that, by the way. Everybody's just focused on adding new assets. That's all they care about. I hate that.
Yeah. And, you know, we were doing that at BitGo as well. And the complexity of the infrastructure at BitGo grew by orders of magnitude as we were doing that. And it made my life a lot more complicated. And I didn't really appreciate having to expend a lot of time working on these other things, though I learned a lot about a lot of these other networks, and if anything, what I learned ended up strengthening my conviction that I believe that like Bitcoin is on the best technical roadmap, if you will, of being conservative with the changes that it's making. And so we think that like as a network that is very narrowly focused on what it's trying to do, that it has a very good chance of continuing to succeed at that, as opposed to a number of other networks that are, you know, more like kitchen sink protocols that are just still trying to figure out what they can best facilitate for people. So, you know, for us, it's simplicity over complexity, I suppose. You know, that ends up rearing its head in a number of different ways, but it makes life easier for everyone, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really like that term, Jameson. I'm stealing that now. Kitchen sink protocols. Can we get that hashtag going, people? Hashtag kitchen sink protocols. No, this is, you know, this is just what we're seeing in the space. We're seeing just that's the only way that people can compete against Bitcoin, right? Is asymmetric information, is preying on people that who don't understand this technology, and all they have to say is we're Bitcoin plus. You know, and it just kind of gets crazy. So it's really great to see, you know, companies like yourself understand that is not the right approach. Understand that because Bitcoin is so focused, the approach that a Bitcoin company needs to take is focus. This is, I think, what Trezor has taken approach as well, and it shows. You know, Trezor is still super, super secure. You know, and there's people that are passionate about that keeping it secure. So there's people in the community that are like constantly trying to hack it, and when they find something, they expose it, and then everything gets fixed. And this is what you get when you focus, as opposed to the kitchen sink with something like Ledger that. Man, they support everything. It's getting really crazy. And so what we've seen it be a little bit less secure. You know, not no knocks to Ledger, but of course, you know, we've seen that they have had issues in keeping their device secure. So,
but, you know, to be completely fair, Trezor is also releasing a lot of new crypto. Just today, I saw a list amongst them. Is I think Monero coming, Cardano and Lisk and a few more. I think even Ripple.
But again, those protocols have been out for a while, though, right? Like, they're not just adding like new stuff, like exchanges and other things.
No. That's true. And Trezor has always been Bitcoin first. And at Casa, we basically have the same idea around security. Bitcoin first. If our clients come to us and they say, "Oh, I have a bunch of, you know, Monero, and I have I don't know Zcash," we will honor our client, because in the end, it's the goal is a sovereign and secure individual. That's the vision of Casa. But saying that, we always be Bitcoin first company.
And of course, you know, and of course, customers will. You know, request additional assets and that's fine and everything. And you want to make sure that, you know, that they are taken care of. But of course, it's a balanced approach. You guys just don't add it because a couple of people want it. You know, you add it if the protocol has been already tested and sort of in the wild for a while, and you have a big enough demand, you know, for it. It's not just one or two people. So let me ask you this then, Jameson, and maybe to Elena, what is the, what are some of the new features coming down the line for Casa that customers who already are familiar with Casa can expect?
Yeah, we are expanding towards Ethereum. We already have single sig Ether support. The multi sig in Ethereum is kind of a tricky deal. So we are kind of waiting and working with the Ethereum community on finding like what is the best protocol for the smart contract.
By tricky, Elena, do you mean non-functional or sorry? I have to knock down Ethereum multi-sig every time I get a chance to. Sorry.
There are several points to the tricky in Ethereum, and it comes like, but basically it's more about there's no a community consensus on a smart contract for multisig in Ethereum. Of course, in the ideal world, multisig would be native, but I don't know if that's coming. I think this is something maybe Jameson can elaborate a little bit more. But this is what we're hoping to introduce in a full beauty, just like for Bitcoin. I don't want to actually give up too many more future plans. Stay tuned.
You guys are always working on something new, I would assume.
Yes. Yes. And this team is working really fast, and I've an unprecedented speed, I would say. We basically released the note in just a few months of work with a beautiful interface, you know, and you'll see more news around the note coming as well. But as I said, I'll keep you, you know, waiting.
Cool. Maybe some kind of integration with Liquid or something like that down the line. You never know. Since they're releasing their full node and stuff lately. Let me ask then, Jameson, the same thing. I'll go ahead and comment. What are you guys looking at for new features? And maybe you can comment a little bit about what Elena said on the multisig.
Yeah, so, you know, this is all an iterative process. On the Vault side, you know, we are talking with various customers and various developer teams about other popular crypto assets that could potentially be added. You know, the Ethereum side, I went through that with BitGo with doing a multi-sig smart contract, and it was a real nightmare. So we wanted to get more standardization around multi-sig on Ethereum. And thankfully, at the recent DevCon 4, there is an effort towards standardizing and formalizing, I think, around the Gnosis contract. So the main thing is that, like, we don't want to put customer funds into a multi-sig contract unless there's like such consensus around it that if it failed, that, you know, Ethereum would basically bail it out. otherwise, I am interested in continuing to add more best practice guidance into the Vault product itself. There's a number of things there of automated health checks and other types of guide rails that we could add in to the app to help basically help the user not shoot themselves in the foot. Just thinking about more of the ways that users can accidentally harm themselves through negligence or ignorance or what have you. And then, of course, the Node product is are very, very new, and we're getting a lot of feedback on that and iterating. And this is only version one of the Node product.
Very, very cool.
It's just an emotional note that it's super exciting to, and one thing is to release an app and a service. It's kind of non-tangible, but when you release a hardware product, it's kind of exciting because you see your babies, traveling with the mail and people getting excited over unpacking and unboxing and sharing, So it's like it threw me back a little bit to the moments when we were sending out Trezor wallets and got getting the first feedback and people, some of them reporting, it's not working, these very early days. So it's kind of a lot of excitement and also anxiety around that, of course, because we want to, everything goes smooth and perfectly well. But no, right now we are collecting a lot of feedback. As Jameson said, we have a private channel for our first Node users where we really basically interact with them and see what's going on there. And we'll be iterating on the Node software in the future.
The tricky thing with this device is that we're basically asking the user to run their own server. And we want this to be a server that someone can run without having, administrative like Linux experience or networking experience. And so we knew that we were going to run into issues around networking and network security and stuff like that. And so that's one of the reasons why at the moment it is only accessible within your local network. We have plans for ways to be able to open that up in a secure fashion, because ultimately we want this to be like your own personal data silo. And, using it for any number of different decentralized apps, if you will, so that when you're out and about doing things in the real world, you can basically phone home to your node to have it give you additional level of security because it's been sitting there, validating all of your information and keeping it safe.
Yep. Very, very cool. So let me just ask one final then question for either Elena or Jameson. Are there any other competitors? Are you guys seeing any competition coming up with basically like this idea of multi-sig with sort of off-the-shelf key signing devices? Are you guys seeing any additional competition coming up for Casa? Elena, maybe?
For the Node or for the...
For Casa.
For Casa, the multi-sig. First of all, I think there's a big demand coming up, not just from the Bitcoin OGs and not just actually we were quite surprised to see the variety of customers that are coming to Casa. So we have people that have had advanced multi-sig setups and they've even studied Glacier protocol and all that kind of stuff. But still, when they saw Casa offering, they chose to go with Casa. And then we, on the other hand, we have, for example, Casa Node users that have never run the command line and they are super happy to just being able to plug and play.
I would say that, you know, there are some multi-sig solutions that are coming out there, but none of them seem to be the type of multi-sig that we're doing. I'm seeing other solutions where it's like multi-sig for enterprises of like sharing amongst, you know, larger groups of people. And then I've also seen some that are like in this like social recovery multi-sig where it's like going out there and instead of you having all of the keys yourself, they're getting distributed amongst like random groups of people. But I haven't seen anything like us where it's multi-sig, but you have all of the devices yourself.
Very powerful. Yeah. And that's, I tried to look around too, like for some type of competition for Casa, but really nobody seems to do exactly what you guys want to do, which is not only of course, give you the best in class security, but still provide the ability 100% to have sovereignty over, you know, your keys and your money. So that doesn't seem to be a big focus for other companies. Of course, you know, things like Coinbase and of course all the institutional investment stuff, they want to hold everything. So that is really, really, really interesting to see. Alina, did you want to comment on that too?
There will be a scale between fully custodian or fully like institutional grade of multi-sig services such as BitGo provides, and there's definitely market for that. Although I'm of the opinion that even companies, you know, hedge funds, investment funds, family offices, they should probably seek out rather CASA type of setup because all the custodian services, and you touched a little bit on that when you mentioned the legacy financial system, you know, as it is like layered and very complex. So all these custodian services have been developed because the traditional system is difficult to secure. So we have specialized companies doing that. In Bitcoin, actually, if we do that, we introduce more risk, right? That's very brutally said, okay? It has nuances, and then, of course, you have very elaborate setup somewhere. But in general, I would always prefer even, like, small, medium-sized companies that don't need, you know, high-volume trading and do moves often to just choose type of CASA environment because of eliminating the third-party risk. That's it.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome.
Those social multi-sig apps that Jameson touched, there are some that are trying to basically use a circle of people you trust. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because that may be that may sound as a good idea, but I'm not sure it is. So, you know, especially when, you know, a life ends. People change sometimes, you know.
So, I can attest to that. People definitely change. And generally, of course, there's even been studies where like every 10 years or something, a person is like entirely different.
You see, and so having like having the common knowledge or distributing the power unwisely amongst your close circles may not just like have them, you know, try to abuse that situation, but also being them an attack vector. Because if you know that, you know, you are using a certain type of setup, then you can potentially, with good social hacking skills, you know, find out who those people are trying to, you know, kind of get this information and social hack the money. I don't know. So I don't know, Jameson, what you think about this, but there is a tendency towards these type of setups. I would be a little bit careful about that as well.
It seems like they're way easy to be social engineered, but go ahead, Jameson.
Yeah, well, you know, ultimately, you probably don't know what the best practices are that these other people are going to follow. And so it's more of like the unknown and lack of control is where security vulnerabilities can come into play. So we do think that if you're controlling all of your own keys, then you know the exact, you know, configuration and you have this additional peace of mind. Whereas And you know, I've done this in the past with some of my like cold storage recovery backup stuff for like in case I get hit by a truck. And I have trusted executors and friends and family who have, you know, pieces of encrypted data. But I've never been able to be fully sure that, you know, they're keeping that data intact and that if something would happen, that they would be able to, remember it and find it and then, you know, be able to come together and reconstitute it.
Yeah, to me, it just sounds like it exacerbates all the issues. I mean, just the whole social thing. So that does not seem wise to me, especially when, you know, it's not like they have a support team around them. Like Jameson says, you don't know what these people set up are. But go ahead, Alina.
Yeah. I would be actually much more comfortable to trust a lawyer, for example, you know, because he's a professional. He is liable by law. He, for example, your inheritance lawyer, right? Your wealth estate, or how do you call it in English? I would totally be fine with having such a person some access or some data or some information. I'm less also fine with entrusting one of my keys, for example, to a bank. A lot of people think that, you know, having a security deposit, like a deposit box in a bank, is a smart thing to do. Little they know that in case of any crisis, at least that comes into play in European Union, the state can basically take away whatever is in the bank accounts and in the bank safe deposits that comes to your documents, whatever. So there are, you know, certain. Like it's very difficult to generalize and say, okay, this is the role. It's not, you know. But
for sure, the idea is not to ever give them more than one key. Like, sure, a lawyer, sure, a bank, sure, but only one of my keys will they get, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting. Well, I think we had a great discussion, guys. I don't want to keep you too long. I usually try to keep these to an hour, so I think we can close it out here. I just want to say really, really again, appreciate you guys being on here. Just a quick recap, you know, we did talk about this new company, Casa, but with Jameson and Elena here, what they have here is a best-in-class key management system with a 3 of 5 multi-sig, and of course, they only ever keep one key just to make sure that it is you still have sovereignty over your own money. They do have a premium service that is available for $10,000 a year, and then again, they just released their new Lightning node, which is pretty cool. I think that's around $300, which will give you access to the Lightning Network and the ability to run a Bitcoin full node with just one click, pretty much, you know, plug and play, right? So that is pretty awesome, guys. I still got to get mine, I got enough nodes as it is. I don't need any more. But again, just really, really thank you guys for being on. I had a great time. Elena, where can we find out more about you?
About me?
About you, Elena.
Okay, just Google. I don't know. Just Google my name. There's some blog about me joining Casa, the medium.com of Casa. You can go to Twitter and see the crazy stuff I'm tweeting at Alena Satoshi.
Yes, everybody follow her. Old school Bitcoiner, guys. Of course, if you don't know. You got to find out who she is. She's been involved in Bitcoin for a number of years now. And again, you guys can find the website at keys.casa for that. And then Jameson, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where we can find out more about you, sir?
Well, you can find the compilation of pretty much everything I've ever done in this space on my website. It's lopp.net.
Yes, and of course we put that. we put that in the video description of every one of our videos, lopp.net, under more resources, and of course we also have that website linked on cryptocast.network because it is, Jameson, still to this day one of the most trusted sites, in my opinion, to find out new information about Bitcoin. So definitely check that out, guys. Lopp.net, very, very awesome. Thanks again, guys, so much for joining. We really appreciate everybody in the chat. If you guys missed the show, definitely join us in the comments below. We put out shows like this all the time, guys. Of course, we're gonna have a crypto Q&A show tomorrow, and then the Bitcoin News show as we do every Sunday. This was the first show back from a bit of a hiatus, so really, really, really glad to be back, and really appreciate everybody for the time. So until next time, guys, just keep talking Bitcoin. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Bye.